You're listening to Holocaust survivor Mel Fedderbusch, interviewed by his son on the occasion of his 90th birthday. Mr. Fedderbusch spent much of his adult life not speaking about his horrific experiences in order to safeguard the feelings of his family. Today, after having 5 grandchildren, he has agreed to reveal the details they've never heard. On this broadcast, Mr. Fedderbusch discusses the concentration camps and death camps at Buchenwald, Triglitz, and Theresienstadt. He reveals details about living in the Polish ghettos and working as a slave laborer for the Nazis. He shares his harrowing experience of being falsely arrested and placed in solitary confinement, and his personal account of the murder of his parents and 9-year-old twin sisters, plus his heroic attempt to save his own life by leaping from a Nazi cattle car headed for the infamous death camp, Auschwitz. Mr. Fedderbusch's testimony and original Buchenwald passport can be viewed at the Museum of Jewish Heritage in New York. His eyewitness accounts can be accessed in the Fortunoff Archives at Yale University and at the Shoah Visual History Foundation, founded by Steven Spielberg. He's a speaker with the Holocaust and Human Rights Education Center in Purchase, New York, where he visits high school students, bringing his message of perpetual hope, global peace, and the end of prejudice. He's an adamant proponent of patriotism for the United States of America and support for her ally in freedom, liberty, and democracy, the State of Israel. This unprecedented live global broadcast is brought to you by TalkRadioX.com. And now, here's your host, Greg Fedderbusch.
Welcome to Hour 5 of my interview with my dad, Mel Fedderbusch. We're going to start with 1939. What's the first thing you remember happening in 1939? Did you know when Germany invaded Czechoslovakia in March?
Oh yes, I did very well. Yeah, of course. Let's go to the first day when the war started in my hometown.
What day was that?
This was on a Saturday,
September 1st, 1939. Yeah,
actually, there was no war declared. From what I understand, I was a kid; I didn't know. But I understand that war was not declared officially, and he just Hitler sent bombers to bomb Poland, especially my hometown where we had a. The airport, the military airport.
So they were bombing the airport, or they were bombing?
They were bombing all around. They're bombing the airport, but they bombed it in such a way that they should not destroy it. You know, they just wanted to make sure to scare us. You know, to intimidate us. I guess because they intended, they knew they're gonna occupy and use that airport. They had planned. They had terrific plans. They knew all of that. They knew they planned. They knew they're going to occupy Poland. They knew very well. They did. In 2 weeks' time, our town was occupied. But the first to remember that I remember is Saturday. We came back from the synagogue. And usually we eat dinner after we come back from the synagogue, which is like noontime. And that's when they started bombing. We didn't have a chance to even sit down at the table when the bombing started falling and exploding.
What did you hear? You heard the bombs first, or heard planes?
We heard the bombs very, very close by. So we all ran into these makeshift that we dug out holes like in a zigzag sort of.
Like trenches?
Trenches sort of. And for protection. It was not safe to be in the house because if the bomb would fall on the house and you're in it, you know. So it was outside and we saw explosions and so on. And I saw a person got killed from the bombs.
Where did you see this?
This was right next to a neighbor of ours got killed somehow from the... From the shrapnel, from the part of the bomb that, from the explosion, probably hit him.
You saw him on the ground?
Yes. First time I saw a dead person in my life.
What did you do? Were you the only one there, or were other people?
No. We all saw it. We all saw that.
So what did you do? Did you run away or to try and hide more or with the bombs already stopped?
No. We knew they kept on bombing every so often throughout the whole day. So we knew that we are in a dangerous place, that our town is dangerous. So we decided to go to a village about 10 kilometers north from us, and they had no military of any kind.
Wait, is this the same day?
The same night. We all...
So the bombing went on all day?
All day. And at night, it stopped. So everybody packed up some stuff, and everybody was carrying something. Some people had little wagons or bicycles, whatever wheels we got, we used to carry to get the stuff over, and we went to that little village by the name of Rakia, where there was absolutely no military. We expected to be safe, and it was safe. We moved in with a distant relative.
That night you stayed with a relative?
Yeah.
Who was it? Do you remember?
Yeah, but it's so distant, I forgot the names.
Okay.
The distant relatives. And they also didn't survive.
So you stayed over them with them the first night. Did you still hear bombing from there, or you couldn't hear?
No. There was no bombing over there, no. This was 10 kilometers north. But little did we realize that not too far from that little village, Ricky, was a main crossroad highway that went north-south and east-west. That's where the military, they were broken up because they were beaten by the Germans. They were all broken up and they were all running east. And this is where they went through. And they also stopped and apparently reorganized themselves right there at that crossroad. Little did we know, we didn't have no idea what was going on. Apparently, the Germans knew, and they came 10 days later, which was exactly September 11, and they started bombing our village. They were...
Where were you at the time?
We were already in a house. Somehow, we rented the house in partners with uncle and his family.
You were inside the house when you heard the first bomb?
Oh, yeah. They started bombing, and they threw down these fire bombs to ignite the houses. The houses were most of them were made out of wood, and the houses were all most of them on fire, and it was the house that we were in was just about to catch fire. We all ran. Everybody ran out. So there was an empty field near a brook. Everybody ran to that empty field.
This is how long after the bombing started was that?
Well, it was a question of minutes.
Oh, really?
Time. The time did not was no. Who looked at time? This wasn't long.
I'm just curious if it was.
I understand, but we didn't. You know, when in a panic like this, you don't look at time.
So, were you scared?
Of course, everybody was scared.
Were you together? Did you stay together with your mom and dad, or what?
Yes, we all stay. Now. My middle brother stayed with my parents, and we was with them. Sydney left in a different direction with our uncle, who lived in the same house. And after a while, they kept on bombing. So we tried to...
Your sisters?
With us.
Oh, okay. So it was you, your mom and dad, and your twin 9-year-old sisters.
Exactly.
Okay.
And we stopped for protection. We stopped near a house that was built from bricks, not wood, bricks. And my mother said, "There's this precious, expensive sewing machine that belongs to my aunt. Go and get it if you can." So I picked myself up as my brother. And we went to that house. This must have been about like 200 300 yards away. And we came, we got the sewing machine out, plus other things, and we put it on a pile about 50 yards away from the burning house, from the burning houses, figuring it will be safe. And then we ran back to the place where we left my parents and the twin sisters. When we came back, this is all a question of maybe 15 minutes in total, or maybe a little bit more. When we came back, they were all dead. They were all lying dead.
And they were shot.
That's right. They were shot.
And they
somehow
were
everybody. I looked off. My mother's face was completely gone. Gone. But the others, my father and the little and my sisters, I didn't see blood. They must have been, I don't know exactly how it happened, how they got killed. It must have been bullets or something.
They were shooting from the planes. Is that what was happening?
That's right. They came down low and they were shooting from the plane.
So they shot everybody who was gathered in that field?
Yeah, there were about over 600 people killed at the same time.
And they all got killed, every single one of them?
No, a lot of them were... over 600 people got killed, and there were also some animals like horses and dogs. And
were there some people that were just wounded?
Some people were just wounded, like my aunt, whose sewing machine belonged to. She had one of her legs was wounded, and she was bleeding, and she's bled to death overnight. And
nobody was there to help?
There was no one around to help, no.
There was no doctors that survived?
No, nothing.
Everyone in that town was in that field?
A lot of them, yes. Not everyone, because my uncle with Sydney fell left in a different direction. And they didn't know for a long time until they came back, which was a few weeks. They didn't know that my parents are dead.
So you and your brother found your parents. How did you both react at that time?
Well, how can you? We were still not safe from the bombs. From the shooting. They came around and around again and again. After 20 minutes or so, they made a circle. They came back again.
And so you ran away?
No, we tried to hide and be safe at this, while my parents were already dead. We still had to make sure that we are safe.
So how far away were you hiding?
Not nearby, very close.
When did it finally stop? Did you stay there for long?
Yes, all day, till about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And then it stopped. That was it.
And who was left?
My aunt was bleeding over there.
So you went back?
My grandfather was around. He was safe. And what could we do at this point? There was nothing to do. We left all these dead people lying there, over 600.
Who else was there alive with you?
And there were other people alive.
And what did you discuss with each other what we should do?
Yes, we discussed what we should do, and we eventually took their bodies into the synagogue, which was not too far away.
How long after was that? That same night?
No, it was the next day.
Where did you stay that night? Do you remember?
In the same house that was not burned down. And we stayed in that house.
Did you sleep at all?
Who remembers that? Who cared about sleeping, you know?
Well, what were you thinking?
It was that kind of a thing that you don't care about, think about yourself whether you sleep or not. That's the way it was. It was it's an unforgettable day. But then we had to, Rosh Hashanah, then Jewish New Year's, it was not too far off, a few days away, just 2 or 3 days away. So they had to be buried, and my grandfather somehow got a wagon of some kind with two wheels, And we picked up our parents and the kids and the twins and my aunt, and we took them to the cemetery where we buried them. And then we went, two weeks later or so, we went back to Dublin, home.
So wasn't there also a story about the dog? Remember you were telling me about your dog, Laika?
Yes, the dog was sitting next to our parents, next to the parents and the kids, for the longest, up until we picked them up. And it would not move. The same dog that I told you about, the name is Laika. It was still the same dog. He was old, but he wouldn't move until we buried them, and then the dog disappeared. We don't know since then where it went, what happened.
It's interesting. So what
happened after that?
Yeah.
After that, we decided to go back to Dublin, to my hometown.
So it was still you, your grandfather, and your brother, Henry.
Right.
And Sydney?
Sydney was still not with us. Right. Still didn't know where he was. It was the uncle.
Where did he end up going? Did you ever find out?
Well, yeah, and also someplace in another village not too far away. And when we came... We had a wagon and horses and wagon that we had rented. I can't remember exactly the details, but I was in a wagon when we were riding into Dublin with some stuff that we belonged to us that we brought with us. And the first time I saw Germans, and they stopped us.
On the way to your town?
On the way back to Dublin. And that crossroad there, this crossroad I told you?
Yeah.
That's where they were. And they stopped us, and they poked us by the bayonets into all the bundles that we had.
They poked with bayonets?
Bayonets. Bayonets, you know those.
They poked the bundles? What were they trying to see?
I don't know. Guns or ammunition, whatever, bombs, who knows? They were looking, and this is what they were looking for. And eventually we came home.
So they let you go, they just looked and did they say where you're going or did they ask?
Oh, yeah,
you?
Of course, they asked where we're going and so on. We told them.
Did they ask in German?
In German, of course.
And who spoke German?
I don't know, they didn't. They spoke a little Yiddish and German, whatever.
Oh, really? So you managed to communicate.
Yeah. And they somehow communicated. And that was it. Then a few days later or so.
Well, wait a minute. So when you got back to your town, what did you see?
This town was safe.
Town was still safe.
The way we left it, the town was not bombed.
Was anyone there who lived? Any of the people?
There's some people there, yes. Not all of the people. There were some people were there already.
Anyone you knew?
Yes, we knew each other. You know, it's a small town.
And what did you discuss what happened? Or what was the first thing you tried to do when you got back?
The first thing we tried to do is to survive, to get food. All the stores were closed. There was nothing. You couldn't buy anything. People did not accept money because it was now occupied by the Germans, and they did not know whether the money had any value, so that nobody accepted money.
So did you have...
Nobody had a store open, and it was difficult to,
to get anything.
To get anything.
Where was the... Did you see Germans in the town? Were they in the town or were they...
Yes. Germans occupied.
So what do you mean occupied? Where were they?
They were in the on the airfield. They were in the citadel. They were gendarmerie in town, like acting as police, you know. And it was all... That's it. There was no... No government, no nothing.
So they were posted, in other words. The German soldiers were posted around the town, yeah?
Yes, sort of. They didn't have to be posted. No, they.
Well, were they standing?
Anytime they wanted to check on something or do something, they just came and did whatever they wanted.
Well, where were they living? Where were they stationed?
Oh, they had. They took over the police station. They took over anything that they wanted. They took over the schools to live in, public places, you know, and even private homes. But the private homes were not suitable for them. Our private homes were not suitable for them.
What do you mean?
They
not suitable in what way?
But it wasn't good enough. It was too primitive.
So they didn't want to stay in those places?
No, they didn't. They stayed in the police quarter. They used the schools. They used the
But when you saw
City Hall.
When you saw them, were they... Like what was what did it look like they were doing? Were they guarding? Were
they were
just
guarding? They had guns, and especially they were very tall and very threatening.
Were they
never saw people like that?
Were they trying to tell the citizens of the town what to do? Were they giving orders?
No, not at first.
Okay, so this is already now. What, October?
No, this is still
September.
September
39.
And then Sidney came, it was his uncle, he came, and he finally told him what the situation was, the parents got killed. And, you know, he was small, and he was 12 years old, and he managed to get food from these Germans by trading for cigarettes. I don't know where he got cigarettes and or other stuff that they needed, and they gave him food, their soup, you know. And this is what we
and he shared it with you. He shared it with you.
Oh yeah.
So what was his reaction like when you told him? What did he say? He was like, "Where's our parents?"
Or well, we told him right away. I mean, Greg.
And what did he say?
What could he say?
Well, let me ask you something. Do you not want to tell me, or do you not remember?
I remember. I don't remember exactly the reaction. He must have cried.
Okay,
he must
so have, you don't know, remember. Okay, that's fine.
I don't remember exactly what it was.
Okay, I understand. And those were the things, like when I was growing up, that I couldn't really understand, because when I asked you questions, you always told me kind of what everyone was doing and what people were faced with, but you never really told me exactly what happened, and I think you don't really remember exactly what happened.
I guess the things that were not important. What's important was we had dinner. We were invited to eat dinner at my uncle's house, and there was a curfew of 6 o'clock, and we had to go from there to where we lived. Was a long stretch was 10, 15 minutes walk, maybe.
How did you know there was a curfew?
Curfew was 6 o'clock.
How did you know that?
They announced it.
How did they announce it? Do you remember?
No.
No, you just knew? Do you remember?
Everybody knew.
Did they have loudspeakers? Did they travel around in vehicles?
I don't know how they announced it, Greg, at this point.
If you walked past them, did they say there's a curfew at 6 p.m., be in your houses?
No, I don't remember exactly how they announced it.
Okay.
But it was announced.
Okay.
And everybody knew that 6 o'clock is a curfew, and after we had dinner, we had to walk home, and we had to pass through the school where the German soldiers lived.
Okay.
Occupied. And one German soldier stopped us with a gun in his hands. And he asked us, where are we going? And we told him we were going home. He says, follow me. He says, go ahead. We had to go to the backyard. He had a gun. And he actually wanted to kill us. There was another German came along, and he says, "What are you, crazy? What do you want from these kids?" You know, we were 16 years old. My younger Sydney was 12. So they let us go. But he could have killed us. It would have been No issue.
Was he killing? Nothing. Were they killing other people at that point?
Well, at this point, of course they did. The Germans did. It was not as bad to begin with as it became. It became worse later on.
Okay.
You know.
So that was the first. That was your first real confrontation.
This is my first experience with the German occupation. And at the same time, there was no government. The airfield was occupied, but everybody went there and picked things up. You know, my brother picked up plywood. He picked up zinc, which was very, very expensive. It came in blocks, well, sort of, zinc. And I understand it was expensive. I never dealt with it, but we kept it until we were able to sell it. We never sold it because a friend of mine, a Polish, he came to my house. I wasn't there. We were working at that time. And my cousin, I had cousins who came from Warsaw staying with us. And he told her that to give me the zinc that it's okay with me that I told him to pick up the zinc, which was a lie. And he picked it up and I never saw it again. But anyway, we started working for the Germans on the airfield, you know.
How did that come about?
They formed a Judenrat, meaning like a board of governors of Jews.
The Jews
from our own people.
The Jews formed it or the German soldiers?
The Germans wanted that.
So they picked people or they asked for volunteers?
They didn't ask. It was formed by our own people, sort of, you know. One pulled in the other and so like, I don't know how many they were, like 10 or 12 people like this. It was called Judenrat. Judenrat.
Yeah, and that occurred everywhere, didn't it?
Yes, they did this in every town they occupied.
But it was the Germans that initiated it. It wasn't the Jews. They just sort of said, gather a bunch of yourselves together and come over here. We want you to do something.
If they wanted something, they told them, the Judenrat, to do it. If they said, we want 50 Jews tomorrow morning for such and such a job. And so they had to supply them with 50 Jews. If they wanted 100, they gave them 100. It had to be done, you know. Otherwise, they asked for gold. And we had to give them gold. Ask for whatever they wanted.
Where did you get the gold from? Where did you get
anybody
it?
Anybody who had a ring or things like that, you know. It was they just robbed us of everything. If you couldn't comply, they killed people.
All right. Okay. So you started working for them at the airfield. Yeah. Judenrat asked you to come and work.
No, the Judenrat said that the Germans are looking for workers on the airfield, and that they're going to pay. This was the beginning, and they did pay. Believe it or not.
What month was this?
Yeah, go ahead.
What month?
It must have been maybe 6 months or so after they occupied. So, you know. It must have been already 1940, beginning of 1940.
So you weren't working. What were you doing for that 6 months?
Do you remember? Nothing. Nothing. Everybody tried to.
How did you get food? How did you get food? And
I remember we were got up early in the morning when it was still dark, and we went to somehow my brother Henry. He somehow had connections, and he found where to find potatoes. That was belonged to the military before the war, you know. Our military.
Oh, they stored potatoes at the airfield?
Not at the airfield. On a farm, on a large farm. And we had to dig them out because they weren't dug out in time. because it was war, you know?
You mean they were still growing in the ground?
They're still lying in the ground.
Lying? Oh, they were covered with dirt or they were growing?
They were growing. In other words, they did not...
They didn't pick them yet.
Pick them out yet.
Right.
And of course, this was already past the season. And we were not supposed to do that. The Germans, the Germans didn't know. So we went early in the morning, we dug those potatoes, and eventually they found out, the Germans, and a couple of people were killed, and that stopped it.
How did they kill them? They caught them there, or?
They caught them, they shot them, and that's it.
What do you mean? Did they catch them taking the potatoes, or did they catch them with the potatoes later somewhere else? Or you don't know?
If they saw them around, if they thought that they were taking potatoes, whether they saw them with the potatoes or without the potatoes or whatever, if they decided to kill, they killed. They didn't need any evidence. They didn't need any, there was no courts. There was nothing. They just, if a stupid, ordinary soldier wanted to kill somebody, they did, especially Jews.
So you heard about this and you said we better stop going.
We all stopped, yes.
And then what did you do for food?
Then we looked all around.
Is that how you spent most of the time looking for food?
Only food. Sydney helped a lot. Sydney was small and he dealt with those with the gendarmes.
What is that?
The Germans, gendarmerie. You know, they're like police.
Uh-huh.
And they were very, very, very dangerous people. And he somehow managed.
They probably thought he was cute because he was little, wasn't he? Kind of small.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Even for his age, he never grew. What is he now? 5'4" or something? He must have been very small. He probably looked even younger than 12. Yeah.
And he looked like a kid, like a boy, like a little boy. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So they. You know, they didn't. He was cute. That's what it is. You're right. And he managed to bring food. So, you know, we tried everything possible. Did we have enough food? No. We just had to struggle, you know.
So you get the job on the air at the airport. And what type of work were you doing there?
At first I did... glazery work. I put glasses into windows, especially those hangars where the airplanes were. And the windows were high up. The opening of an airplane of such a hangar was very big to accommodate airplanes to come in. But above that, I would estimate it was about two stories high, at least.
Mm-hmm.
They were windows made out of steel.
Steel frames.
And we were sitting on planks of wood, maybe a foot wide or less, and putting in those windows because you couldn't there were no windows to take down. It was just like only frames and we had to be, had to be done from a scaffold.
Uh-huh.
So this is what I did at first, and
they paid you.
Yes, they paid.
And were you able to buy anything with that money?
Well, we all got paid. Sydney and all of us worked.
What type of money?
Henry was in a woodworking shop. Sydney was working on a farm, which is about 3 kilometers away, and. It was the middle of the day, and I was on a scaffold when a car pulled up, and two big Gestapo men walked out, and they said, and asked for my name, who is Melvin Federbusch, or Mendel Federbusch? And that's me, I said, me. This was before the ghetto even started, but they were already talking about the ghetto. And they took me to the headquarters over there. And there I see Sydney and my uncle Achmiel. And when I arrived, these two young Polish kids, young. I mean, they were my age. The point is, they said, yes, he is the right Federbush. So they let my Sydney go, and they let my and my uncle also. But in the meantime, just before he left, my uncle said, what did you do? What did you do? I knew nothing. I didn't do anything. So they left. Then they took me in, and they wanted to interrogate me about sabotage. And I had no idea what was going on. What happened was that two Polish kids who were working also on the airport, the Germans caught them cutting cables from trucks. Trucks that these cables were supposed to be, they were connecting to...
steel cables?
But it's connecting to another part to pull it.
Okay.
And the cable, and the Germans caught them cutting it.
Why were they cutting it?
That was the question. That was the German asked, why did you cut the cables? And the Germans were always suspicious of underground, of Polish underground. Why did you cut the cables? And they said, well, because we are afraid of some Jews. On the way home, we have to go through a Jewish section, and we are afraid of some Jews. That's why we need the cables to defend ourselves. Oh, the German said, who are the Jews that you're afraid of? So who do they think of? Me, because I went to school with them.
Were they the same kids that kicked you in the testicles?
No, this is a different story.
I know it's a different story, but I'm wondering if
this is not the same ones. No.
Okay.
So I said, I had no idea what was going on. So they picked up feather bushes. First picked up my uncle. They picked up my brother, Sidney. And of course, these two Polacks said, no, he's not the right feather bush. So when I arrived, they said, oh, that's the one. Okay. So I was interrogated, and that interrogation, they nearly killed me. Two big Gestapo guys with leeches to hit. I made out of leather.
Leather whips? Like
leather
straps?
Whips, right, whips.
Yeah.
And they whipped me like unbelievable. I had to be half naked. I mean, I had to take off my shirt. And I couldn't tell them anything. I knew nothing. So eventually, they put us in a local jail.
What do you mean, us?
All three of us, the Polish boys and me.
Oh, they were still...
But I was not together with them.
Okay.
Local jail, and the next day, they took us to a jail, to the next town, which was called Pulawy. We stayed there for a few days, and from there, they took us to a jail, which was a state jail to go in a town by the name of Lublin. This is the jail where they took, before the war, the communist boys, a lot of them Jewish, to that jail. And when they came back, they described that jail. And now I am in that same jail.
Hmm.
The interrogation was, again, over there, unbelievable. They were beating like crazy.
What were they trying to ask you?
They tried to find out if there is an organization, if there is a underground behind the whole thing, you know?
Like trying to undermine what the Germans were doing?
They were always afraid of underground. Underground people who were fighting against the Germans. That's called underground.
Was there an underground at that point that you knew about?
I didn't know about it. There was one, but I didn't know anything about it. Then in the jail... I had, everybody had one of those aluminum kind of
cups
to get the food in, the soup.
Like a plate, a bowl?
It was like a can. A can was like a little round to fit your body. This is what all the soldiers wore, those kind of things.
They wore them?
You had to have your own, you know.
You mean they carried around their own little can?
All the time. The soldiers, yes. Because unlike the American soldiers, they don't have it. All the other soldiers and other armies had a can like this because food came in a very big castle, like the diameter was like 4 feet in diameter or more.
Like a box?
5 feet in like diameter. A big pot that was pulled by horses. And that's how they served food to the soldiers, and that's how they served food here too. But it was not, because the food came in a smaller can, because it was a jail. It was an indoor thing. In the hallway, they had some kind of a big container with the food, and they dished it out.
What?
You gave them the can. The can, and they put some food in.
What now, food?
Can, huh?
What kind of food?
Like a soup, like a watered down soup. It didn't mean much, you know. It was really no food. But it was that's all they gave us. But this is the story is, I've dropped my can on the floor. It made a terrific noise. So the guards came in and says, "What happened? Well, who did this?" And one guy pointed at me, "I did this." So they didn't ask any questions. They put me into solitary confinement. Solitary confinement was a totally different place. They took me there and they locked me in, and it was dark. Completely dark, no light. And there was one man over there that I didn't know what he looked like. And he told me stories. That's what kept me going. Without him, I couldn't. I would not survive this. The food that came, they gave us in on the bottom of the door. On the bottom of each door was like a hole big enough to put that can through. And the stories that he told me was absolutely fascinating. I can't remember them, but that kept me going, and I never knew what he looked like. I still, till today, don't know what that man looked like.
Did he tell you his name?
Yes, who remembers? Hmm. You know how many years? This was in 1939, end of 1939 or 1940.
So how long were you in there?
Oh, for about a week or 8 days. And then they put me back into the cell. So this was some experience. And eventually, about 2 months, I was there in total about 3 months, and they let us go home. When I came back to Dublin, at that point, there was a ghetto already.
Would you mind if I asked you some more questions about the jail, or you'd rather not?
Sure, yes.
Was there a bathroom in the solitary confinement? Was there a toilet, or did you have to use the floor?
No, there was a pot of some kind.
So you had to find it in the dark?
In the dark, yes.
And did they clean it out every once in a while, or once a day?
They had to clean it out every so often, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Across from us, there was a little hallway, and across from that, we heard there were two men. And we were talking to them. We were sort of screaming to one another. And one guy was a highly intelligent man, and the other guy was not a normal human being. He wasn't normal. And they put these two together deliberately, and this man was really suffering from that. It was really one experience. But then when we came back, when he let us go, came back to the ghetto, I could no longer go to my house. My house was not in the area where the ghetto was. So
wait. So the Germans formed what's called a ghetto. They basically made a fence around a certain area for the Jews.
No, they didn't make a fence at all. They just pointed. We pointed out these houses, all of them, where the Jews lived. This is the ghetto.
And they
from
said,
now on, this is the ghetto. And
did they call it a ghetto?
There was no fence.
What word did they use in German? Ghetto. It wasn't called a ghetto.
Ghetto is ghetto, yes.
It was a German word that means ghetto?
Yes.
Okay.
No, ghetto is also in German.
Oh, so they said it the same way. They said, this is a ghetto. They literally called it a ghetto then at that time.
This is restricted. This is a restricted area. You know, this is your ghetto, and this is it. You can only leave by uh, by by uh, uh, some kind of permit.
Did they tell you why they let you out of jail, or did they try and?
No, they didn't say anything.
They never asked. They never interrogated you anymore once you got out.
They didn't interrogate me, Isaiah.
They whip you again?
Oh yes, many times.
So were
about,
you
at least three times?
Are you kidding? So you knew you were going to be whipped. Was like, what did you feel?
What do you feel? Pain. They whip you, you know, it's pain.
Were you bleeding from it, or were you just sort of...
Yes, I was sort of bleeding in the back, and on my back,
and
yes.
Did they treat you for that afterwards, or no?
No, not treat you.
I'm just asking. Don't get pissed at me.
No, I'm sorry. This is my reaction. This is sort of like a reaction of mine. They don't treat you. They treated you like animals. They did not treat you for anything.
I understand. I just need you to tell me that. I just need to hear it.
I understand. This is the way it was.
Okay. So they let you go. You went back. You were all in a ghetto. Now you found your brother and your grandfather, your two brothers.
Yes. They were...
Sidney, Henry.
They were sleeping. All they need is places to sleep. That's all they really... That's all he really needed. They slept in my grandfather's house, apartment, and I slept in my aunt. There was an aunt there. She was married to a butcher, and she had a little boy who was younger than me, and she had three little girls. No, one girl was about my age, and the other two were younger.
What was their name? Do you know? Do you remember? Who were they related to?
The oldest one was Chandel. I can't remember the others.
Do you remember who they were related to? Who were they related?
My aunt was my father's sister.
Oh, so this is your father's sister.
Yes.
Was she from this hometown?
Yes.
So you knew her all along?
Sure.
And was she one of the sisters that you didn't know was a relative of yours at first?
No.
Okay.
No. All relatives who lived in Dublin, I knew.
So you stayed with them?
Yes, and of course, and I worked at the Bechtel and the airport. And that's how it went on. And then when they came and they made a deportation to Sobibor, of 2,000 people, approximately. At that point, we went to the camp voluntarily. There was a camp for people who were working for the airport. At the airport, these people were snatched off the street in other towns, and they lived in that camp. And they got food, and they slept there, of course. Then, when we realized, somehow, we realized that we're entitled to go to the camp and get food, we get into the camp, and we got food there. And we were supposed to sleep there in order to get the food. So, one of us always covered the others. Like, if I was not there, Sidney would cover for me and my brother. In other words, when it came to the... appel, meaning they're counting us, he would call, they would call up my name, and he would say, here I am, you know. And that's how we got food, every one of us.
And during the time that you weren't there, you were back with that aunt at their house? Or where?
No, after the deportation,
no.
They left. They were gone. They took them.
Oh, they were gone, but you were still working at the airport.
Exactly.
And that's when you started to stay sleep at the airport, at this camp.
Right.
But why would you have not been there? Why would they have to cover for you?
Why? Because we didn't want to sleep in the camp.
So where did you sleep?
We also had, I slept in that house with my aunt, where my aunt lived.
Uh-huh, but they were gone, but you still stayed there.
They were gone, yeah. So my brothers also slept there. When they didn't go to when they didn't sleep on the camp, so we
uh-huh.
We rotated, and
was
that's
it
how
it
went.
Why did you stay in the camp? Difficult conditions there?
Yeah, the conditions were lousy.
Was it a bunch of
also because we wanted to we had a lot of stuff in the houses, furniture. We even had potatoes down in the basement. We had all kinds of stuff, and we didn't want to give up their place.
How did you have potatoes in the basement?
We had potatoes that we had bought, or we took it from that farm. Remember, I told you.
Right, you just stored them down there.
Oh yes, you stored them down below, and yeah, there was a basement, and the
camp. What did the camp look like where you slept? What was it?
Well, the camp was a barrack.
Was it part of the airport?
No, it was not inside the airport. It was outside of the airport, about 2-3 miles away from the airport.
Oh, so you'd have to walk there after
yes,
working.
Exactly. And but the point is, it didn't take long. The Germans brought in about 2,000 or more people from Slovakia, Jews. And these Jews, you should have seen them. They looked beautifully dressed, just like you see it here on Madison Avenue. The man wore beautiful suits with shoes and everything. They really were dressed beautifully. I mean, we haven't seen this in 2 years since the occupation of since the war started, and they started and they did exactly what we did. They went to work to the airfield and to other the same places where we did. And in September of the same year, they made the second deportation. At this point, this was bloody. They killed a lot of them because these Slovakian Jews did not think that the order to go to the square meant to them also. They thought this was only for the Polish Jews, you know. So they didn't come out of the houses. So the Germans came in and they killed them. And it was a bloody situation.
Where were you at this time, at the airport?
I was at the airport working.
Oh, yeah.
And I had no idea what was going on. I found out when it was already too late. But I couldn't do anything about it. I wouldn't dare to go into the city. It was much too dangerous. So at that point, this was the second deportation. This time they went to Treblinka, not to Sobibor.
What year was this? Do you remember? Was this 41?
Yes, 1941.
What month?
September. The first deportation was May. This one was September.
Now, at that point in time, how much did you know about what else was going on in Europe regarding the Nazis?
About the killing,
the camps.
We didn't know much.
No,
we didn't know much. We didn't. Also, when we found out, when people came with the news that these places they were killing people. We did not believe. We thought that this is just a rumor.
Because they weren't really mass killing where you were. There was no mass killing.
We had no idea where they went. In fact, what the Germans did, when the Jews were on the square, they made announcements that they're going to take them to Russia. Well, they were already in Russia, occupied part of Russia, or east. And they each one would have a farm, and their situation would be better than it was in the ghetto. And everybody sort of believed it. They had no other choice.
Right.
And they went.
And it was easier to get them to move by telling them stuff like that than to force them.
And those who didn't want to go and tried to escape, the Polish people surrounded them also, and they would not let them. There were isolated cases where they would hide a Jew here and there, but in 99% all went, you know.
It says here in my note, in my timeline about the war, that on June 22nd, 1941, the German army invaded, that's when they invaded the Soviet Union.
That's correct, yeah.
There was a thing called an Einsatzgruppen,
Einsatzgruppen, yes. They're the killers.
Mobile killing squads began the mass murders of Jews, gypsies, and communist leaders in Russia.
That's right. That's what they did.
And at this...
In Russia, they did not have a Treblinka or a Sobibor. Like here, they just killed them. They have them dug
ditches.
Ditches, graves, and they kill them and they threw them in the ditches. They killed hundreds of thousands of Russian Jews that way.
So on September 1st, it says then the German Jews, so in Germany, I guess it was, German Jews above the age of 6 were forced to wear a yellow Star of David. This is all around the same time that they were deporting the Jews from your town to the death camps.
Right. Also, they actually, this is the what it was on exactly the date, I can't remember. I think it was 1941. It was all started after they went into Russia.
Okay, so that was the summer. That was in June.
The summer of, at that time, they decided at Wannsee, which is a place. Wannsee means, Zee is a lake. Wann is the name of the lake, which is a suburb of Berlin. And there they assembled the top SS and people, like Eichmann and others like that, about 30 of them. And they decided on the final solution over there. And that's when all the mass killing started.
Was Hitler there with them too?
No, I don't know about this, but I don't know. I don't think so. No. Hitler was too smart to be in such places like that.
Uh-huh. That's the end of Hour 5. Hour 6, we will continue with this story, finishing up what happened at Mel's escape and how he managed to survive through the end of the war and what he did after the war was over. And then Hour 7, we're scheduled to record Mel in Florida, and he will answer questions from students from all over the world. Common questions include those about God, how Mel could still believe in God after what happened to him, and how his faith in mankind has changed, and what he believes now about freedom. Also, at that time, we will take some additional emails from our listeners. If you have any questions, please email them to melsurvived@aol.com. That's Mel, M-E-L, survived@aol.com. And we will include them in the final recording. Thanks for taking the time to listen.